We know enough about our climate problem to know that it's serious and that we need to get started right away.
What we're seeing right now is a clear loading of the weather dice.
And so we need energy miracles. Now, when I use the term miracle, I don't mean something that's impossible. You know, the microprocessor is a miracle. The personal computer is a miracle. The internet and its services are a miracle.
That's Bill Gates, the founder of Microsoft, describing a miracle solution for energy in a TED Talk on climate change. I'm Tom Crane. Good afternoon. Paul Huttner is here with this week's Climate Cast. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Tom.
When it comes to energy and climate change solutions, you're seeing some data that highlights some surprising links in the economy with business growth.
Tom, you might say the miracle Bill Gates described is called decoupling. That's the idea that a company can continue to grow its business while at the same time reducing carbon emissions. Tim Nixon is head of sustainability thought leadership with Thomson Reuters. His research for clients finds insight into economic trends and identifies companies that are both adapting to climate change and showing growth. Thomson Reuters' client list includes some of the world's biggest investors and law firms. And Tim tells me for many companies, it's no longer always a choice between growth and green.
So historically, greenhouse gas emissions and economic growth are actually linked together, so that going back over the last 50 years, 100 years or so, what you would see is economic growth increasing along with greenhouse gas emissions. And what decoupling is all about is a break in that trend. So now what we're seeing is economic growth, but actually decreasing greenhouse gas emissions rather than increasing emissions.
So are you saying that there are companies today who are growing and reducing greenhouse gas emissions at the same time?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Paul. We're seeing increasing evidence in the data of many companies emerging from the pack and learning how to grow their business while at the same time reducing their emissions. And this has other benefits for these companies, such as attracting additional investor interest and also reducing their regulatory risk from new regulations requiring reductions in carbon emissions.
So what are some recognizable companies that people might know that are the most successful at showing growth while reducing emissions?
Well, right in our backyard here, Paul, Xcel Energy is actually one of the global leaders in this category. They are one of the top emitters of greenhouse gases globally, but it doesn't make it a bad guy from a company perspective. Actually, it's a leader. It's a good guy in the sense that it's reducing its emissions significantly while at the same time growing its business. So it's a global leader right in our backyard, Xcel Energy.
I know you have a way of charting how well companies are doing with growth and emissions. Tell us about green dots and red dots.
Sure, Paul. So what we have, fortunately, on climate change is clear guidance on what leadership looks like. And it's actually a scientific thing. So if a company or a government or even a household is reducing its emissions year over year by at least 2%, then scientifically speaking, it's a green dot because it's helping to keep us under 2 degrees of global warming. Conversely, if a company is not decreasing by at least 2% per year its total carbon footprint, it's a red dot. It's exporting risk onto other households or companies or governments to lower their emissions even further.
And is there pushback against decoupling by some companies and corporations?
Yeah, there is significant pushback, and that's not surprising. You know, to ask a company that's been running its business by growing its emissions and revenue together to suddenly change and start to grow its business while at the same time reducing emissions, that can be a dramatic step. And so it's completely natural for companies to push back and resist that. Unfortunately, for companies that do that, they're increasingly finding themselves isolated by other companies that have decided to adapt.
You mentioned Xcel Energy. It's a company a lot of folks here in Minnesota know. What are some other big name companies that are doing well on decoupling greenhouse gas emissions and growth?
Right. Yeah. Another one that might surprise people is Toyota Motor Corporation. So if you think about Toyota, much of the carbon footprint from Toyota comes from the use of their products, right? Their cars, of course. And if you look at Toyota's long-term plan, they're looking at reducing their carbon emissions across their fleet by 30 to 40% through, you know, the year 2030. So, you know, Toyota is really playing the long game. And, you know, most people might not think of a car company as having that opportunity, but Toyota is a great example of one.
I know you drill down through a lot of data in your work. Are you optimistic looking ahead?
Well, I'm optimistic in the sense that the largest investors in the world, you know, the world's experts on risk, investors like BlackRock and Vanguard, that just those two alone represent $10 trillion in assets under management, they are becoming very focused on this issue. So just take, for example, Exxon. You might have heard about the recent shareholder vote requiring Exxon to come up with a climate resilience plan. Well, behind that vote were BlackRock and Vanguard. And it's, you know, it's that kind of economic power, that kind of expertise on risk that is now mobilizing behind this decarbonization strategy. And, you know, when you have that kind of power and that kind of money pushing this along, I think it's somewhat reasonable to be optimistic.
Tim Nixon from Thomson Reuters, great insight today. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Full disclosure, Tom, I was asked to volunteer some brief global climate facts in that Thomson Reuters report. The big picture on energy and climate solutions may center on just how quickly companies can adapt their greenhouse gas emissions curves and still enjoy robust economic growth. This report shows that some of the world's top 100 carbon emitters are already finding that success.
An example there, Paul, it sounds like of some changing thinking, conventional wisdom changing, tipping
Indeed.
Here when it comes to climate change. Well, I want to talk to you about yesterday. We had news here on All Things Considered and elsewhere, too, about something huge. This is a huge thing in the world. A major iceberg the size of Delaware broke off an ice shelf in Antarctica and directly. What is the link to climate there?
Yeah, that iceberg is huge. It's called A68. It's a 1 trillion ton iceberg, and it holds twice the volume of Lake Erie in the Great Lakes. Now, NASA satellites captured the fracture from space on the Larsen C ice shelf in Antarctica. Tom, here's the important climate connection. The calving of A68 by itself will not have much effect on sea level rise. The longer range concern for climate scientists is the breakup of ice shelves like Larsen C, and that will effectively uncork land-based glaciers and speed up meltwater flow into the ocean. That process does raise sea level. Just how fast that happens is still one of those climate change wild cards. And that Larsen C Antarctic ice shelf, it's well known to Minnesota polar explorer Will Steger.
In 1989, we crossed Antarctica and we crossed the Larsen A, B, and C ice shelves by dog team. The A and B now are gone. The C is the largest of the three ice shelves. It took us about a month to cross these three ice shelves. That's how large they are. The ice shelves actually buttress against the continent, in this case, the Antarctic Peninsula. And it holds in place these large glaciers, some of the largest glaciers in the world. The one we went up on Antarctica was 125 miles long. Well, now that the Larsen C is starting to break up now, these glaciers, the ice will start flowing into the ocean, and that's where we get the sea level rise.
Tom, it's the Larsen C ice shelf that's making news this week, but climate scientists also monitoring several other large Antarctic ice shelves for signs of decay.
So we have seen this before, maybe nothing quite this big, but we've seen other ones like this.
We have. Calving's part of a natural process. The question is, when you break up these ice shelves, how quickly does that land-based ice begin to flow into the ocean?
Paul Huttner with this week's ClimateCast. Interesting stuff as always, Paul. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tom.